This is about greed. This is about the fact that there used to be about 1.4, 1.5 million people that lived in Detroit, and just in Detroit. And what was popular here was Dodge Main, Chevrolet Gear and Axle, Huber Avenue Foundry, Lynch Road Assembly, Rouge Plant, the great Rouge Plant, where the great and late General Baker worked for many, many years. And these factories built something called a middle class across the country. Just where I live in Detroit alone, 400,000 manufacturing jobs have disappeared. No one can take that kind of a hit. And where did they go? They went the way of technology. That's the technology that used to enhance labor, now replaces labor. So R2-D2 robots now work at these quote-unquote factories. These dinosaurs are gone, and so those good-paying jobs left with them. And, of course, you have people of color. Let's go get them first. Of course, you have blue-collar workers. Let's go get them first. But this is more egregious. A woman and a child living on welfare in Michigan gets $420 a month in cash assistance. That tabulates to $5,040 in a year. This no good, trifling, backstabbing Kevin Orr, the emergency manager, is getting $1,000 an hour. This man makes $8,000 in one day. A family of two, $5,040 in a year. It's outrageous. And then to come after folks that have lost work, that have lost jobs, that are sticking and staying in Detroit to try to help to rebuild and repopulate my city, and then to say what we're going to do is turn your water off because you can't pay for it.
We're not going to tolerate this mess.
We're going to have to leave it there,
but we will certainly continue to cover this crucial issue. Maureen Taylor, state chair of the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization, Mira Karananthan, is international water campaigner for the Blue Planet Project. That does it for our show. Our website is democracynow.org. We have job openings. Check our website. I'm Amy Goodman. Talk about that.
Well, that was why I put the microphone out. As soon as I get everything all set up, you turn the radio on.
Your phone thing is all...
I haven't gotten to the phone thing. Hands off the phone. I'm dealing with...
Radio guy, are you?
All right. Foam is fine.
It's still crooked.
Well, that doesn't matter if the foam is crooked on the microphone. For God's sake, let's not be a professional. Hang on, I got to turn my telephone off. I'm getting GSM noise.
Oh, yeah. Mine might be on as well. I'll turn mine off.
Well, why don't you put your wheels on the... your hands on the wheels... I mean, I want...
Is that light green? It is green. Okay.
All right. Hold on a second. It's more important...
Should I remove the battery, too?
I saw as my phone was turning off that I received two messages, but I guess I won't read them right now. I have a cool phone. I have a dual SIM phone. It has two SIMs in it. One, an Irish SIM, which I guess will give away where we are right now, and the other is my American SIM, so that's kind of cool. What's bad is that this phone doesn't work in the United States. It's only a dual frequency, but it's still... a cool thing, only cost me €30. Hang on, we're driving and we're looking for the M7. That's right up there, Kyle.
Yes.
Let's resume where we left off, which was outside the Euston train station in London, where we were talking for quite a while outside in a pub.
Yes.
And one of us was going to go and look for food, and that one of us turned out to be me.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I walked around the neighborhood for a little bit and looked for suitable places to eat. I found a table dancing establishment, which was rather interesting. I didn't go in. It wasn't interesting in that regard, but it's just interesting that that was there. But then I walked a little further down the road, and I saw this incredible Nepalese restaurant, which had a glowing review by none other than Michael Palin, who does amazing travel programs and is a former member of Monty Python, and as it turns out, lives down the road from this place and just was giving it really positive reviews on this little placard outside. So that was enough for me. I went back, got you, and we went inside this place, and it was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I'm so glad
that you chose a place that had tables that stay still and don't dance. I don't like, we have no interest in dancing tables, and basically it's best to let somebody go when you have a lot of bags. Let somebody scout things out, and you did an uncanny job scouting this out, because boy was I was tired, I was hungry, we had just had a bit of beer, and when you came back and said you're gonna be thrilled, you had this huge beaming smile. I was like, all right, he's got something good. And we went around the block, and the guys were really pleasant. It was almost like being in another world. And apparently the kitchen was downstairs, they had a little dumb waiter. The waiters were nice and smart, but they had an elevator.
Whoa.
They had an elevator that moves the food up and down, and it's funny because they had an intercom, but the intercom didn't really work, but they would buzz and then shout down the elevator shaft to the cook. It was very homey, lots of guys serving you, but the food was impeccable, really, really good, and a welcome change from some of the food that we'd had or not had in transit and whatnot. So yeah, it was really cozy and comforting.
Thank you, Michael Palin, for recommending it, because that review meant a lot to us. And it also was sort of a tie into his series Himalaya, where he traveled to the Himalayan area, and obviously Nepalese food has a tie into that. I don't know of any Nepalese places in New York. Actually, I might know of a couple, but it's not the kind of thing you would see everywhere. It's similar to Indian, sort of similar to Afghan as well, and maybe a little bit of Chinese thrown in. Definitely interesting. So we did that, and that's also evidence that, okay, hold on a second, we gotta get this road right. You want to go in that direction that I'm pointing right now. What is that? That's like 10 o'clock. We're in a traffic circle. We're always in a traffic circle.
It's like a half circle.
Hang on. I think you want to be in the left lane. Yeah, go there. Yeah. We're taking the M7 towards Dublin. We've had some such amazing adventures over here. But it's what we're describing that happened to us in London is evidence that you don't have to plan these things. You just have to walk around the block a couple of times and look for things. And they will come out and they will find you. And you'll have some really incredible experiences.
And often it's not all fast food. If you walk around enough, you can find some really pleasant stuff, because train stations have a lot of people and there tend to be really good restaurants. But you got to look for them. You can't just settle and get something quick. If you put off your hunger just a little bit, you'll get a real treat. And this certainly was one of those instances.
Now, in this next traffic circle, you're going to be going to the right, just so you know.
Got it.
But just to point out, Kyle's been doing all the driving, which I really appreciate. And I hope it's not because you think I'm a lousy driver. I know last time there was that incident, which we're not legally allowed to talk about.
Good at other stuff that...
So it is me not being able to drive well.
I like you less calm and, you know, or less, more on the calm.
You're going to see me less calm if you keep up like this.
I like you more, helping, and I friggin' love driving.
So I don't help when I drive, is what you're saying.
You get into it with the car and the roads, and you tend to curse the institutions that built them and why they built them in the way they are.
I can also get into it with the passenger.
You mean driver?
Well, in this case, the driver. But when I'm the driver, you're the passenger.
Well,
all right. Well, I'm glad this came out. I'm glad
we have our fair share of that. No, I'm having fun. We have a really nice Audi, and it's a tiny little car, and it's really fast.
It's fun to drive, is it?
It's fun as heck.
Never driven an Audi.
I've never driven an Audi.
No, I've never driven an Audi.
Oh, so it's all about you.
Well, I did rent the car, you know, and I've never actually driven it, so I am kind of curious. It's made by VW, it's owned by VW or something like that?
Yeah, it's a VAG, Volkswagen Auto Group brand, and Audi's had a long tradition. And yeah, I've never driven, I've driven a lot of Volkswagens, but never an Audi. And I don't know, it's pretty fun. It's a little car, and it really helps the some of the roads and the whole being on the left side. And when we're out in the rural areas, we'll get to that help, because the roads are a lot more narrow and curvy and dangerous.
Well, I did drive on those roads in the past, and I can attest, it's nerve-wracking. You did an amazing job not hitting anything. I never hit anything either. But it's relaxing to be a passenger. I'm not used to that. A little bit of a asterisk there. It's not really that relaxing, because you're on the other side of the road, You're on very narrow roads. You're going at what I consider to be excessive speeds, not because of you, because of what they say is allowed. Like, you know, 100 kilometers an hour on a road that basically doesn't have more than an inch clearance on either side for your car, and a country road with windy curves and things like that, just don't think that's correct. I think there's somebody made a typo someplace. 100 kilometers an hour, which is the equivalent of just over 60 miles an hour, I believe.
The road we're on now, just for comparison, is a four-lane highway, and the speed recommended speed is 120 here, which is about 74 miles an hour.
Yeah, and I feel comfortable there. It's a nice highway, and they don't have very many highways in Ireland. In fact, they haven't had many highways until fairly recently. So this is more of what I'm used to. But then again, you know, a couple of days of that, and I got used to the narrow roads as well, and I felt pretty comfortable. So thanks for driving. It's great to be able to sit here and just hold a microphone and not have to worry. But let's go back to leaving London, because that's when we started our trip over to this particular part of the Isles. We took a train up towards Liverpool. When I say towards Liverpool, what I mean is it wasn't one train to Liverpool. Now, this is kind of weird, because in England, there's privatization of the rails. So you have different companies that compete with each other. And we had the option of taking a train from London to Liverpool and spending a massive amount of money, something like well over £100 each, which would be about $200 each, just to make that two-hour train trip. Now imagine taking the Long Island Railroad out to, say, Port Jefferson or something and paying $200 for one trip. That's not quite right. So I did a bit of searching, and kind of like the Eurostar, just refusing to accept I just confused myself, because while we were leaving London, our story had only gotten up to the point where we had left Rome. So I almost skipped over the entire Rome to Paris thing just now.
True.
This is so confusing, because now we're dealing with three different timelines. Okay, well, let me just finish at least that particular part of the story, because I'm sure I won't remember to do it otherwise.
Now I'm confused.
Yeah, you're confused. Well, basically, we left off where we were leaving London in real time. We were recording in London, and that's when we were going to walk around, and that's when we found the Nepalese place. But we were telling a story while we were in London of our travels, and that story had only gotten up to us leaving Rome on the overnight train. And now we're in Ireland. We're well beyond England. So we just have to keep all that in mind. And you're driving on the wrong side of the road.
I'm still thinking about the...
No, you're driving on the wrong side of the road. Get on the right side of the road, please. Thank you.
No, but the left is... This is the right.
Now, okay, good. That's good swerving there. See, radio, you can paint a picture.
Yes.
Would you like to paint a picture, Kyle?
I paint pictures all the time.
He's painting a picture right now as he's driving.
Yes.
This is the magic of radio again. You see that in your eyes. I mean, in your mind. Let's finish. Let's finish the story I was telling in the wrong time frame. So we were heading up to Liverpool, basically there are different train companies. I looked around on the internet, and I was freaking out, because, you know, $200 to go 2 hours, or maybe it was more like 3 hours, was way too much. And so eventually I found something that was more like around, I think, $30. Much, much better. But there's a little caveat. It wasn't one train. We had to switch to a different train. And if you looked at the itinerary, step number two was walk. It just said, yes, now you must walk from this place to this place. And it was basically the same city. I don't remember the name of the city, but we had to go from apparently one train station to another train station. And all that because Virgin Trains, which was the company that we chose, Virgin Trains didn't have clearance or something to go directly to Liverpool from London. I don't know what the reason was, but it was ridiculous that we had to walk. And that walk was absolutely insane, too. We were in this rather small community, halfway between, or maybe two-thirds of the way between London and Liverpool, and we had to walk to what they called the Central Station. But the thing is, no one had ever heard of the Central Station before in that community, apparently, people we talked to. And when we finally got to it, it was a 15-minute walk, and we had a lot of bags and things like that. We had time. We had about 45 minutes to get there before our train came. But it was the most ramshackle station. It looked like it was built in the 1800s, and by the time the train got there, it was this this really noisy diesel-powered three-car train or two-car train that looked like it came from the 1950s itself. It was kind of cool, but it was also a bit nerve-wracking. And I just have to wonder what the rail system in England, what kind of secrets it holds. Any comments you have on that before we go back to where we're supposed to be talking about?
It was just really late, and yeah, as you indicated, these train lines intersected. We had gone sort of west, and then we had to go north or south, and the stations were cross town, so we got off of the Virgin train and then walked across town. Had to ask people where the station was, and then finally wait on the platform for about 20 minutes or longer, maybe 30 minutes. And in any event, it was late, and it was probably 1 or 2, pretty late by the time we got to our accommodations and got to put our bags down. And we had a mini version of that when we went across town to get to the train station. And I believe we walked that entire way when we were in London, because basically they wanted like €20 just for like a subway pass, and we forgot that. But this is basically your skill, which is looking at the train systems, figuring out what they want, and then figuring out the deal, the way to do it as a local or somebody who at least is seasoned enough to know where the scam or the hang-up is, either in their system or in the personalities of the people trying to gouge you. These kinds of things, ordinary people, travelers, would probably have a lot of trouble with, but we tend to see them for what they are and to take the path of wisest choosing. I don't know.
Usually the path of most resistance, but it does tend to pay off. But yeah, we already did make reference to the London adventure, which, as you say, was a bit of a ripoff. It was going from St. Pancras train station to Euston, one stop away on the Underground, but that one stop in rush hour would cost £4.50 each, which is, flirting with $10 for one stop on a subway. And yeah, it was a 10-12 minute walk with heavy bags, but I still think that was a better deal.
Well, and if people don't think about it, these are the things that pile up your costs of traveling. This is what keeps people from traveling. They say, well, Europe's so expensive, this, that, and the other thing. And you got to take the time and look and make sure you make the right step on firm footing, so to speak, to get to the next leg, all puns intended, of your journey. So we've been making some really, really good choices and having fun, even when we have to walk across town and wait for another train and make these connections. But anyway.
What we could have done, in retrospect, we could have hung out at St. Pancras train station until rush hour ended and the rates came back down. But then we wouldn't be sure that we had our tickets in order at Euston station. So it's always good to make sure you have your ticket for the next leg of your journey sorted out. That way you can relax.
And I guess Liverpool was a bit of a hoot.
But we can't talk about Liverpool because we have to go back to Rome. Otherwise, we're just going to get all mixed up here. I started that story, so I wanted to finish it. But we have to stop at Liverpool, and we'll resume that. We'll resume in Liverpool, unless there's anything you want to say about the train itself, the two trains.
Okay, there's a car in tow up here in the left lane that I want to pass.
Okay, now we're back in the present, which is very confusing as well. We can talk about the present if things like a car in tow come up, but we're not going to actually talk about this leg of the journey until after we talk about the previous leg of the journey, and then the leg of the journey that we are skipping, well, not skipping, but haven't talked about yet.
So where are we in Rome?
We're leaving Rome. we're trying to get out of Rome. This we had already bought the tickets. You had already waited online at the post office to mail the postcard, which was a big ordeal to mail a postcard.
We did it right, though.
Yes, we did it right. How did we do it right? We waited online.
We had full stomachs and a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah. No, we already talked about going to dinner. And it was pleasant. We did that. We went to this restaurant across the street from where we were staying. We had our bags at the place we were staying, and then we walked to the train station.
This train was going to Milan, and we got on with about 20 minutes to spare. It was a beautiful train, nice air conditioning. And the window shade was automated. That was the first thing I noticed once I put our bags down and got settled. And so I was playing with that, and I got the camera. I took some photographs of the scenery as we were leaving and heading up north to Milan. And this actually was the fastest train that we were on.
It was a Eurostar, but not the Eurostar you might think about that goes from Paris to London. It's the Italian Eurostar. And I recall now, as you say this, that we did talk about that train, because I remember talking about the one penny deal for internet. So that's about where we left things off. We didn't talk about the window shade, so if there's anything more you want to say about that, please feel free.
Well, I played with it enough for it to break, or at least time out, and then eventually started working again. So.
Well, no, the way it works, I mean, it's a window shade like a window shade. You can just pull it up or down. You know, I realize United States trains, we don't even have those. We don't even have window shades. But they have these nice little shades, sturdy shades that you can pull up and down. But we were sitting opposite each other. We had a little table between us. And yeah, we don't even have tables on our trains. And on the table, we had AC. We were able to plug in. We had internet. We had everything. But there was a little button on each side of the table where we could make the shade go up. And we can make the shade go down. And very quickly, it turned into a little battle between us where you made the shade go up and I immediately made it go down and vice versa.
Yes, and then I think the computer system realizes that these games are going on and then locks both of us out. And granted, you can also just pull it manually. I think you already sort of alluded to that. But so we played with that for a little while and then timed it all out. And then it eventually came back on and started working, but only after a little bit of time was put between us playing with it or battling with it.
There's one other thing about that train that you noticed. Well, first of all, we have a tradition. Archer, you're going 150 kilometers an hour, Kyle.
145.
All right, what is that equivalent to in miles?
86.
And why is your speedometer in miles and kilometers is what it translates to? It's predominantly miles. I guess that's right. In the UK, at least, they speak in miles. But here in Ireland, they speak in kilometers.
Correct. I don't know why. I believe that this is a right-hand drive vehicle, but perhaps it was originally marketed in the UK somehow, and then the rental agency brought it over to Ireland where they have things in kilometers, or maybe in the north. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, it's 159 kilometers to Dublin, and your turnoff is the M50. If you see the M50, shout or say something.
Yeah, I'm not trying to put us in peril. I just am beating feet a little bit so that we have some time to rest and explore and get a good meal and basically don't spend the whole rest of our day in the car. As tempting as it is to mosey along behind some caravan, I do want to kind of get across this country so that, so we can enjoy the time we have left here and sort of prepare ourselves for other forms of travel coming up tomorrow.
And getting across country takes about 3 hours from one side to the other when you drive across Ireland, which is pretty cool. So getting back to the train up to Milan from Rome, what you noticed, and this sort of ties into a tradition we have, for some reason we always wind up getting, when we get reservations, we're always in the very last car, or close to the very last car, so we have to walk a very long time down the platform to get to our particular car. And so that's what we did, but in this particular case, the engine was the next car to ours. And you noticed that if you walked up to the front of the of our car,
yeah,
you could see into the engine, and in fact, the door had been left unlocked.
It was unlatched.
Not on our end. We couldn't just walk into the engine, but on the other end, I've always wondered about this. You could see into the back of the engine, and there was this long corridor going all the way down, I guess, to the front where the engineer actually is.
Yeah, that was amazing, because you saw all the panels and the storage cabinetry and stuff in there, and it was all painted like a nice teal green, similar, sort of reminiscent of telco, like pastels and stuff, and very like utilitarian in there, just a long corridor, and then just realizing that we were attached to the fastest part of that train, so much power, we were directly behind. And the very door at the very end of what I could see, and the door was sort of opening and closing as we were rocking back and forth on the rails. But when it was open, you could see all the way to the front, and you'd realize the conductor's right behind there, or the engineer is right behind that door, and he's very busy keeping us moving right along at what was about 298 or around 300 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, and he was behind the door in the front of the of that particular engine, so basically you'd have to walk an entire train car down this corridor to actually surprise him and say, hey, where's the restroom or something like that. And what's also interesting is that at one particular stop along the way, and this happens sometimes when you're taking trains in Europe, the train just started going in the other direction. They go to a particular station and the track kind of goes in a totally different direction and you reverse course. You don't reverse course. You're not going back over old track. You're just kind of...
It pulls out of the station and then probably is switched onto the correct track and then eventually goes in the direction that you're going. But it was sort of an in and out, nose in and then nose out of the station. And then, as I said, you're gradually sort of guided onto the next track and stuff.
But you continue going in the opposite direction, at least from your perspective. So that engine was in the back of the train from that point. We were, instead of being the first car, we were the last car. And the engine stayed along, but the lights had been turned out, so there was nobody there anymore, apparently. And what's kind of funny and ironic about that is that we had walked all the way down the platform to get to our car because it was, I guess, the first car right behind the engine. And when we got to Milan, we were the last car, so we didn't get the advantage of being the first car next to the... We had still had to walk all the way down because we were now the last car. That's just our luck. That's just the way things go. So, yeah, Milan, that's where we had a little bit of time to wait for our next train, which was the one to Paris, the overnight train to Paris. And this was the one that I was a little apprehensive about because the shouting guy in Rome who sold us the ticket assured us that this was a sleeper. And it, somehow it fits six people, and I was trying to figure out how six people could sleep in a single cabin that had two seats, two seats that faced each other. You could hold three people on each side of the seat, but I just didn't know how that would actually work. So we got on the train, we found our compartment, and what's the first thing we saw when we got into that compartment? You don't remember, do you?
Three Chinese people?
There are three Chinese people in there. There's a family, a family of Chinese people. they were as baffled as I was. But you weren't. You immediately jumped into action, and they didn't know what they were doing. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where beds were going to come from. But you, even though you'd never done this before, you figured it out. You figured out exactly how to make three beds on each side. How exactly did that work?
Well, I remember like Amtrak trains and basically how they worked, that something was going to fold down. There was, of course, a bunk on the very top already and all of our bed makings. And then I realized that basically the backrest flipped down and that's the middle bunk. And then the very bottom where you would sit ordinarily face to face, like in a seat, that becomes the bottom bed. Some of them didn't latch right. It was a bit... kludgy on some of them, but I did my best to get them all folded down and anchored for everyone, because we sat for a little while. The first thing I did was get all the luggage sorted. I was helping everybody throw their bags up. As soon as I realized there was a bit of a compartment over the door, I thought, okay, well, there's way more overhead baggage storage than we thought when we walked in. I thought it was just directly across, like above the window, just like a little shelf kind of thing, but there's actually a shelf above the doorway, so we had...
You immediately scrambled up there and started grabbing everybody's bags and storing them in a safe place.
Yeah, it was sort of like a little gymnastics of basically putting one hand on the other thing, totally avoiding the ladder, just jumping up there and starting to have people hand me bags, because I realized, I mean, it was hot. We had just carried a whole bunch of stuff down to the end of the platform, which apparently, I don't know what has been going on this trip, but we've been cursed with this. On the ends of platforms and the very tops of hotels and things, and just we're just always sort of relegated to that. And we had all these sort of gifts and bags and things on us, which was a bit cumbersome. So anyway, I realized that if I didn't act, the torture would just continue, which would be us being locked in this place, sweating with bags everywhere and nobody able to sit down. So I jumped up and I just said, hey, you know, hand me this, hand me that. I just, you know, got everybody's bags up and out of the way because all six of us had to sit in there. And I was able to get that sort of under control. We sat for a little while and apparently the alarm got kicked.
Sorry, we're just passing President Obama's ancestral village in Ireland. Did you see that sign that time?
I did see it that time. I remember you pointed it out when we rode here in the evening. So that's very interesting. And I'm going to have to decline any interest in stopping
it's
off.
It's in a place called Moneygall. Moneygall, Moneygall, exit 23 on the M7. For those of you looking for that particular place. So we're in this this compartment now, and the electricity hasn't been turned on yet, so it's hot. There is AC on the train, but the AC hasn't been turned on. And Italy, it was pretty damn warm when we were staying there, so we were really looking forward to having some air and some coolness. But we basically, you basically got the mood in the place much, much better. And people started talking. I should point out, you're doing 150 and it's 120 and you're the fastest car on the road and we're in a foreign country. And
yes, but there's only 138 kilometers left until Dublin.
That may be so, but it could also be the longest 138 kilometers of your life because we might get pulled over and arrested.
But don't you like adventure?
Yes. You know what? Okay. My objection is withdrawn. Going back to the train car, so we started basically talking. There was this Chinese family, like we said, a daughter and her parents were traveling, and there was a guy that I thought was from Italy because he didn't really speak any English and he kept saying he was from Milan, but actually turned out to be Pakistani, and he was coming from Milan, but there was still a big language barrier, so that's why I didn't know exactly where he was from. But we did the best we could, and we had some nice conversations with the family and shared some stories.
Yeah, he just said, in Milan, when we were responding.
Finally, Pakistani guy, yeah.
Yeah, and you left the room. I said, what language do you speak? Because I was talking to the Chinese people, and we couldn't figure out what language he spoke. And in any event, it was really much better once we got comfortable. And apparently the alarm for that cabin was tripped. The seal on it wasn't broken, and I don't think it was me, although one of the bags might have nudged it just a little bit out of place when I was throwing bags up there. But we were sitting for like 20 minutes, and this whistle was going off, and it was a shrill, shrill whistle. And apparently the conductors were going to every cabin, checking all the alarms and tightening them down, and they came and checked ours, and ours was tripped. So that was sort of humorous because everybody knew that I had been leaping around, and we kind of suspected maybe I had something to do with that, but it was delaying the train's actual departure. But once we were underway, it was really about these bunks and getting some rest, because when you're speaking with somebody who doesn't, you know, a Pakistani guy who doesn't speak anything, he wasn't really that talkative, that, you know, anything that was going on. There's a lot of English, broken English between the Chinese guys and us, but conversation sort of dwindles at a certain point. And it is a sleeper. It was an evening train, and I think we both kind of, given that we had certain bunks and all of that, I had the top bunk, apparently. You and I had been in discussions about that, and we kind of wanted to facilitate that, get out of the way, because we realized all these people were going to be sleeping on the very seats where our rears were planted. So we made motions to start doing that, but there was all kinds of trouble with that. But I finally got all the bunks down and latched and everything. Basically, from experience on Amtrak-style trains and sort of just intuition, I was just like, again, this is like the bags being thrown up. We're going to have three Chinese people wrestling with trying to get these beds down and all that, and the Pakistani guy had really no inclination or intuition as to how that all would go. So, and I had a pretty good idea that the sheets they give you are sort of like half sleeping bags, and they give you a bit of a blanket and pillows. I got all that stuff out and sort of, I got ours in place and then helped everybody else with theirs. And again, realized that, like, if I knew how to do it and I could take charge and get it done, we'd all be more comfortable, we'd all be well rested. And when you're on a sleeper train, you kind of just want that. The one other thing that was a bit interesting and bizarre was the conductor came around and took our passports, and somehow you got out of it.
Well, I was upset. I said, why in God's name are you taking passports on a train from Italy to France? It's in the zone where you're not even supposed to show passports. And they said something about overnight train security or whatever, but since we were traveling together, they apparently were happy to just get yours, and they didn't want mine after all. So, God, Jesus Christ. All right, you can't do that.
What? Do what?
When you take a drink of a Red Bull, you swerve almost into the wall there.
It's chicken or the egg. Am I going to be able to keep driving without the Red Bull or what?
Look, first of all, you should be in the left lane, which is the slow lane, not the right lane.
Yes, but how can I pass every car on the road if I'm in the left lane?
You're doing 160 kilometers an hour now.
I'll slow down.
So you practically tucked everybody into the bed too, which was really, you know, nice as far, because we couldn't figure out how to even make the damn beds. Really, a more helpless crowd of people I don't think I've ever seen. Of course, I'm one of them. Eventually we got everybody tucked away. I was in the middle bunk, had the Pakistani guy below me, I had you on top of me, and to the right, on the other side, were the three Chinese people, the Chinese family, all on top of each other. And that's how we slept. And somehow we did sleep, too, because next thing I know, it was morning time, and we were basically gently awoken by the light and by, I guess, the realization that we're getting closer to our destination, which was Paris.
And Chinese people eating day-old McDonald's.
That's what they had for breakfast. Yeah, they had brought day-old McDonald's with them, and the funny thing is, we were very talkative at night before we made the beds, but in the daytime, pretty much nobody said anything to each other.
Yeah, everything, as I said, had dwindled on into the next day. I was woken up by them taking pictures of everything. They had like 10, like 5 different cameras or something. It was crazy. And everything was, you know, worthy of a photograph. And it was basically a lull into morning. And on in we went to, London, right? No, wait.
Paris. We went to Paris.
Paris, yeah, France.
Nice city, nice place.
Yeah, Paris. It's really neat. No. I really liked. I liked going to Paris. I'm trying to jog my memory. What? Paris. Oh, that was great. We spent a couple days there. Oh, I love going to Paris. I love hearing all the French. And we basically came into their familiar station, Gare du Nord.
Well, actually, we came to Gare de Lyon, and we had to get on RER train. To take us to Gare du Nord, which worked out very smoothly. We got a bunch of little tickets, and were able to ride both on the metro and on the regional trains. There we were in the familiar Gare du Nord station, and we found the cheap hotel we had booked and made our way there. And yeah, it was very familiar, very comfortable.
Yes.
And we basically wandered around. We were rested, fairly rested, and we weren't spending a whole lot of time in Paris because our main goal was to get back towards the British Isles and Ireland. But we spent a couple of days there, and it was cool. We saw a movie, which is a cool thing to do in foreign cities, don't you think?
Yeah, we kind of worked out of Gare du Nord because we knew we were leaving from there, and that's basically how you get around the city. You can catch all the basic regional trains and the metro system. And we went back to sort of a district where we had seen some really good movies at a smaller theater. And we saw sort of a blockbuster movie, and we had a couple meals in some of the... Or a nice, okay meal in the touristy area. But just kind of going with the flow and, you know, taking in a little bit of Paris. We saw some really neat things. We went on the raised boardwalk that day, which actually passes back by Gare de Lyon.
The park that was built on former train tracks, just like the the park in New York City, whose name escapes me at the moment. The High Line Park in New York City is based on that. So yeah, that was cool to walk along that. We did laundry. You know, we basically just sort of lived in Paris for a couple of days and got our bearings back.
Yep, doing all the normal things, a little bit of laundry, all that kind of regrouping and getting ready for coming towards the UK and spending a bit of time in Ireland.
Yes. And of course, as we mentioned, when you travel, getting the next leg settled is always an important part of it. And for us, that meant figuring out how to get to... sorry, I'm reading road signs as we drive here in Ireland to make sure we don't overshoot our exit. That meant figuring out a way to get to London, which, you know, I figured would be the Eurostar, the actual Eurostar, the one that people know about.
We have a toll coming up.
Oh, God, a toll. Okay, hold on a second. Do we have any change?
I've got change here, okay. So you're going to have to count it, because I need to drive.
Why don't you hold the mic? Oh, you can't hold the microphone while you're driving.
I can hold it with
okay.
my teeth.
We need a €1.90.
I think there's a euro in there.
By the way, this hardly hears you at all when you're talking.
There's a euro in there.
Okay, hang on.
I have to speak special English.
Hush. There's €1. Is there a place for me to put it? It's €1.90, right?
Yes, I would put it under the emergency brake or in your hand.
I'm putting it on my lap for now while I count it out. Okay, I'm up to €1.50. Maybe if you weren't driving so fast, maybe we wouldn't get to the toll booth so quickly.
I have nothing to say about this.
Just slow down a little bit. I'll have more time to count the change. €1.50. Now, what's this over here? This is a 20. So now I'm up to €1.70. If there's another... No, there isn't another 20. See, this is where things get complicated. I've got 10 and I've got a 2. That's not going
to
help.
114 kilometers to Dublin.
That's wonderful, but we don't... Okay, I'm going to have to give you €2 because it doesn't add up to 190, unfortunately. So here's €2 in your hand there.
Okay, and they're going to give me change, so I'll look for the human kiosk.
Yeah, look for the human, and then I'll add the change to the change I have in my hand right now. Okay, here we go. You're probably barreling into the toll booth at 160 isn't the way you want to make an entrance.
It actually isn't immediately on the road. It's just that the road sign that indicated the M7 in Dublin were ahead did indicate there is a toll. So we know there's a toll upcoming. We should be looking for those signs any minute now, and then we'll be ready. That's just a heads up. But I did tell you well in advance. It wasn't immediately ahead. It's just ahead.
Okay. Well, it's going to be up pretty quickly, the speed we're going. I really want one of these energy drinks here. So let me just... If I could just put the mic down for a second while I open. I've change in one hand, microphone in the other, a Red Bull between my knees, and a recording device on my lap, and also directions opened out so that I'm reading. And all Kyle's doing is driving.
I'll hold the mic. And basically, now I have one hand on the wheel, and we're going just under 150 kilometers an hour, which is too fast, but as I said, we're hightailing it for Dublin.
Okay, well, I've got my energy drink, so I've got the microphone back, and everything seems to be okay. Boy, that's refreshing. We're going to hit the toll booth, and then let me finish with the Eurostar story. That was the most... sensible way to go, but it was also rather expensive. It was more expensive than I really was comfortable with, and I was looking at alternatives. Apparently there's a way to take a train to a boat to another train in England, like it used to work before the Eurostar. So I was trying to figure that out, and then I realized that would be more expensive. I was pricing it out, and it actually was more expensive than the Eurostar. So then I said, okay, let's just get on the Eurostar. It's a bit more than I wanted, but, you know, whatever. So I went through this whole big thing of going to the Eurostar website and registering for that particular fare. And, you know, I entered all the information, And it's one of those web pages where there's always one little thing that you didn't do. Like, I didn't get the salutation. It got rejected because I forgot to put Mr. for my name. And then there's all kinds of other little things, like, oh, you got to put a check mark here and uncheck this. And so finally it went through. But then it said that, what did it say? It just didn't say anything. Yeah, it just basically rejected the whole thing. And then when I went back, the price had gone up by another 100 euro. I was fit to be tied. And basically, while I was booking that particular seat, I had the seat numbers and everything, the price had changed or it had been sold or something. And I could not get that rate again. So now, in addition to paying more than I wanted to pay, I was paying double more than what I wanted to pay, or if I wanted to go ahead. And I was just absolutely livid. I think you saw me. My face was red with rage in the hotel lobby there as I was on. I was at this for over an hour, just trying to deal with these idiots, trying to book a ticket, and I just basically started looking for any kind of alternative. Like, how do you find cheap fare on the Eurostar? And I went through other sites as well, and they weren't working, and the cheapest fare was that new expensive fare, and it was really, really a bad situation. But then I found this other site that claimed to have the old price, the price that I had just lost. And so, with my fingers crossed, which is hard to do when you're typing, I entered all the information again and basically went through it all, entered credit card information, everything I'd already done, and crossed my fingers. I did not expect it to work, but lo and behold, it went through. It actually went through. And not only that, they were the same seats that I just lost, the same seat numbers and everything. So it was really kind of bizarre and strange. And I was very scared that something would go wrong, or maybe two different people would get booked into the same seats, or I don't know what I thought could happen. But what I wanted to do was head over to Gare du Nord, the train station across the street, and just get those tickets before they changed their mind. And so we went over there, went to a ticket machine, got the tickets printed out, and then I wanted to go over to the actual Eurostar people and ask them, so what is the cheapest fare for tomorrow? And it was really good to hear that the cheapest fare was much more than what I had just paid. Those little triumphs, that's what traveling can be all about sometimes. So we booked our ticket on the Eurostar, took the Eurostar over to England. And Kyle, this was your first time on the Eurostar, right?
Yes, it was.
Any thoughts?
Well, we weren't as far down the platform this time. And it was quite a fast train. The security was a bit strict going through. I had one of my bags well searched. They didn't check my other two bags, though. That was sort of interesting. And I got a full pat down. And that was a bit unnerving. And the thing is, you went through under the EU passports. I went through the all other passport kind of route. Then that line was being held up. I almost had a glass door closed on me, like a automatic door. I was getting a little frustrated. The guy said, he announced, okay, go over to this way. You can over to the left. You'll have a much easier time. Waited in that line, then got up to the desk and realized that you and I hadn't really reminded one another that I need to fill out a landing card coming from Paris to go into London. So I went back out and nervously filled out my landing card, not really realizing where I was staying, because you have to say where you're staying. I just said Liverpool, just Liverpool, UK, to just indicate that is the accommodation. That's my host in the UK. So I thank you, Liverpool, for letting me stay with you. And basically filled out the rest of it, where I had last, what port I had left last, which I said was Rome and Munich in different orders. And it was really nervous because I hadn't filled out. I didn't know what you were doing and if I had enough time or anything. It was just taking forever. And it's silly the way that the UK sort of blocks everybody off there and does all these pre-screening and whatnot, whilst being a part of the EU. It feels a bit snobby. And so it was nice of the guy to have suggested, why don't you just go around the corner, fill out your landing card and come back. And then I went to this nice old lady who was a customs lady when she was freed up and was able to get stamped right in. Then went through security, as I said, and was frisked. They wanted to know what my tripod was all about and opened up that bag, but pretty much ignored the other bags. I was worried my pocket knife and, you know, some of the stuff I bring would be scrutinized, but I was able to bring my folding knife onto the train, which was cool. I was fairly happy that they kind of respected that, because as a person in another country, a survival kind of guy, if we're out camping or something and, you know, you want to whittle a stick or something, it's kind of nice to have a folding knife. And it was actually a gift when I was best man at a friend's wedding, so I really wasn't keen on losing it.
The toll booth is coming up in 2 kilometers, so I'm going to give you a moment to gather that change together, and give me a moment to move the other... Where should I put this extra change that I'm holding in my hand? In your hand, really? You want
that? Sure.
Okay. Because you already have the other change. All right, if you want to do it that way.
If I give her 210,
you're really going fast. I'm sorry, what?
Reduce speed. Okay.
Yeah, reduce speed.
Reduce speed.
So you listen to the sign that says reduce speed, but not me asking it to reduce speed.
Sure.
Okay, so it's a euro 90 for a car. If you're a motorcycle, it's a euro. And there's a whole bunch of other prices, too. So I'm going to let Kyle deal with this now, because driving is hard enough, but... dealing with a toll booth in a foreign country is almost impossible. I think you want to be on the left, right, where the human is? The humans are everywhere, actually, so...
There's 3 lanes of humans.
Yeah, the human going straight ahead now, so... I like that little graphic of a human on the lights above. Are you nervous?
A little.
You've paid these tolls before. It's usually a pretty friendly transaction.
I like to speak as American as possible, like really boring English. Right,
let's hear this.
Hi there.
Thanks a lot.
So long.
Wow, that was pretty boring.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done. And we're through the toll and into parts east of Ireland.
That's the first time I haven't had to back out of a toll booth here and go to the right lane.
Oh, that's not true.
I
think there was one that you got right.
Barely. I was over in the automated line and had to cross 4 lanes. Another one I pulled up and then had to back out because it didn't give change. It's tricky business.
Got some snacks here. I don't know if you're interested in any of these. We have...
Yeah, I was wondering if you could pass me the crisps.
Okay, you know, that's... Okay, that's something... as a little preview of what we're going to talk about later, we were in England, and were we on a boat or something when we overheard this... What was the actual discourse that we heard a child say to its father?
A mother.
Mother?
Yeah, they were just talking about their crisps.
They wanted to know if they could have any crisps.
Crisps.
And, okay, you know, I figure if you make a language, right, and you make a word like crisp, and you have children saying things like, may I have more crisps, you know, it just sort of paints this cutesy-poo picture that you'd never see in other countries, and it kind of defines who you are. I don't think you'd ever hear somebody in Germany talking like that.
Yeah, and... the funny thing is, it's just a word, but it is sort of cute, just the way you say it, and especially with an accent.
Can I have some crisps?
And it's really cute, but I realized you'd never hear that in the States, because it's chips. Mom, can I have chips?
Right.
I want chips. And the funny thing is, they have chips here too, like fish and chips, but it doesn't get the same connotations, because kids don't usually order fish and chips. I guess maybe they do say chips when they want fries and stuff, but it's a lot cuter when they say crisps.
Right. Now, okay, here's the scene. The scene is an officer of some sort, some authority figure, demanding that you turn over all of your crisps. Now, I want you to make that sound authoritarian.
Young man, give me all of your crisps.
I'm sorry, but that does not sound like anything I would take seriously.
Well... serious is a matter of opinion, I think.
All right. Well,
it's a serious matter when you get your crisps.
Yeah, and by the way, crisps are chips, same thing in England. And, okay, so then what do you call... wait, so we don't have that word crisps. And chips to them are fries, right?
Only 86 kilometers till Dublin.
Okay, but we're going to get off before Dublin on whatever turnoff that is.
That's on you, Navigator.
Yeah, I'll let you know. But I'm trying to talk about chips and crisps and things like that. No, so chips are fries?
Yes.
All right, and I guess they just don't use the word fries, so it's a trade-off there. Anyway, we also have some jelly tots. Would you like some jelly tots?
I'm trying to quit the jelly tots.
I think they're like jelly beans or something. I'm not really sure. What else we got here? We've got... We had to get all this because we were at a gas station. Apparently, there was a deal, and if we just bought one, we'd be idiots, so we had to get three.
Do you have any of the mixed chews?
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, those are the randoms.
Ask the question again?
The mixed chews?
I'll ask the question because I only got like the last word of that.
Have you any mixed chews?
I'll look. These are Roundtree's randoms. Randoms? That's the name of a candy? Hang on. And then pick mix. Is that what you mean?
Yes, pick and mix.
Pick and mix. So you got fruit gums, tutti frutti's, and fruit pastilles.
Yes.
Wow, we're going to get sick tonight. In the back, somewhere, I think we had crisps. Yeah. Here we go. We've got tato, cheese, and onion, the original Irish crisp. This actually does say crisp on it.
Yeah, and apparently this brand is they're famous and they're very good. Our friend Marianne was telling us about them.
And this other one is Tato Smoky Bacon. Why did you get the smoky bacon?
I thought it might be good. It's not quite barbecue. Maybe bacon's a little better.
So I've got all these disgusting snacks on my lap now. They're probably all right, but it's more than I bargained for. But they were cheap, and... they're entertaining, I'll say that. We're going to stop because we have to start navigating a little bit more. And I think we've talked enough about this. And we're almost up to the Liverpool part that we're supposed to be up to. So I'm just going to ask Kyle, any impressions of the actual ride on Eurostar for the first time?
Oh... it's very fast, and it's sort of funny. It's like a hand-painted sign when you go into the tunnel under the actual channel. The channel. And anyway, it was really funny. I was trying to record a little bit of us zooming by, but it's really quite a while before you actually get to the coast, and then... if you're not careful, you just miss this sort of hand-painted sign or, like, very cheesy old sign that indicates you're going under the channel, in the channel. And then you're in darkness, basically, for a while. It's a very wide tunnel. You see the reflection of the lights in the windows and stuff. Thank you. Yeah, it's shorter than I thought. I thought it would be a much longer ride under the channel, in the channel. And I honestly wasn't as claustrophobic as I thought it would be. That was it. And then we popped out the other side.
That's pretty much it. And then we were in England, and then we wound up in London. And that's where we ended the last segment. So when we begin again, I think we'll pick it up in Liverpool, right?
Was that smoky bacon, or is that the cheese?
This was cheese and onion.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I thought that's the one you wanted.
Yes.
Right. So,
we end up where?
Liverpool. Well, we're stopping now because now we've arrived in London, all right? And we already talked about that at the beginning of this particular segment. And we made it all the way up to Liverpool. So when we resume next, even though we're here in Ireland right now, we're going to talk about being in Liverpool.
Liverpool is the capital of Ireland.
No. Okay, you know, we have a lot of corrections and things to note for the next time. But for now, we're just going to sign off as we continue on the road to Dublin. which is the M7 right now, and we're going to turn off to something else, I believe. And I'm sure we'll have more adventures to talk about by then. Hopefully, we'll be through all these snacks by the time we resume.
In the merry month of June, from me home I started, left the girls of tune, nearly broken hearted, saluted father dear, kissed me darling mother, drank a pint of beer, my grief and tears to smother, then off to reap the corn, leave where I was born, cut the stout black thorn to banish ghosts and goblins, a brand new pair of brogues, rattling o'er the bugs, frightening all the dogs, on the rocky road to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hunt the hare and turn her down the rocky road, all the way to Dublin, whack full of the rock. In Mullingar that night I rested limbs so weary, started by daylight, me spirits blithe and airy, took a drop of the pure, keep me heart from sinking, that's the Paddy's cure, whenever he's on for drinking, to see the lassie smile, laughing all the while, at me curious style, twould set your heart a bubble and ask if I was hired, wages I require, till I was nearly tired of the rocky road to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hunt the hare and turn her down the rocky road, all the way to Dublin, whack for lully rock. In Dublin next arrived, I thought it such a pity to be so soon deprived of view of that fine city. Well, then I took a stroll, all among the quality bundle it was stolen. In a neat locality, something crossed my mind. When I looked behind, no bundle could I find upon my stick. A wobbling inquired, and Father Rogue said me Connaught Brogue wasn't much in vogue on the rocky road to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hut the hare and turn her down the rocky road, all the way to Dublin, whack the lully rock. From there I got away, my spirits never fail, and landed on the quay just as the ship was sailing. The captain at me roared, said that no room had he, when I jumped aboard a cabin found for Paddy down among the pigs. Played some funny rigs, danced some hearty jigs, the water round me bubbling when a folly head. Wished myself was dead or better far instead, on the rocky road to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hunt the hare and turn her down the rocky road, all the way to Dublin, whack the lully rock. The boys of Liverpool, when we safely landed, called myself a fool. I could no longer stand it, blood began to boil. Temper I was losing, poor old Ayrton's Isle. They began abusing her, ah, me souse as Irish ale, I let fly. Galway boys were nigh, and saw I was a-hobbling with a loud hooray. Joined in the affray, we quickly cleared the way for the rocky road to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hunt the hare and turn her down the rocky road, all the way to Dublin, whack for lully rock. Whack for lully
Thank you. kids. Finn's Revolution with you tonight till 9 p.m. right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Tonight, a few of the young ladies from Mariachi Flor de Tolache right here on WUSB. All-female mariachi band. That's right, you heard me right. And some tickets to see Mistaken for Strangers, a great, great and funny movie about the band The National. Right now, stay tuned. You see, now I don't like that, do I? Anyway, we're hearing music from The National, or attempting to, in the background right here. There we go. We're going to give away some tickets right now to hear The National and see this great, great film this Monday night at 8:30 p.m., 7:30 p.m., rather, at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. The film is Mistaken for Strangers. It's a rock doc of the surprisingly affecting look at sibling dynamics in a creative family where one brother is vastly more successful than the other. Tom Berninger's film chronicles his experience on the road with his big brother, Matt's band, The National. This is complimentary tickets to the Cinema Arts Center to hear something from The National, who we're hearing in the background right now, get this great, great dynamic. This movie is funny. This movie is not your classic rock doc where things are dry. It's funny, interactive. It's a great, great, great film. If you would like tickets to see Mistaken for Strangers, this great movie about the siblings in and out of the band The National, give me a call right now, 631-632-6901. That's 631-632-6901 next Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Compliments of WUSB and the Cinema Arts Center. Mistaken for Strangers, a great film about the band The National. Funny, funny, funny. Hailed by Michael Moore as one of the best documentaries of that band he's ever seen. And by Pitchfork as the funniest, most made-up music movie since Spinal Tap. Mistaken for Strangers on the big screen this Monday night coming up, 631-632-6901. Get you a pair of tickets to see this film. Give me a call right now. The film is this Monday night, Cinema Arts Center, Huntington, 631-632-6901.
Appreciate the void, you should know me better than that. I should live a song for leaving you behind. I should live a song for leaving you behind.
All right, congratulations to Steven, who got himself a pair of tickets to see Mistaken for Strangers this Monday night. You can get yourself a pair of tickets, too. Mistaken for Strangers, great film, a rock doc with a surprisingly affecting look at sibling dynamics in a creative family where one brother is vastly more successful than the other. Tom Berninger's film chronicles his experience on the road with his big brother Matt's band, The National, who we just heard. And this includes an after party with our own J-Ro from WUSB's Radio Free J-Ro, spinning tunes right at the Cinema Arts Center. Hailed by Michael Moore as one of the best documentaries about a band that I've ever seen, and by Pitchfork as the funniest, most meta music movie since Spinal Tap, Mistaken for Strangers is a truly hilarious and touching film about two brothers, Matt and Tom Berninger. Matt, the lead singer of the critically acclaimed rock band The National, finally finds himself flush with success. His younger brother Tom is a lovable slacker, a filmmaker, and metalhead still living with his parents in Cincinnati. On the eve of The National's biggest tour to date, Matt invites Tom to work for the band as a roadie, unaware of Tom's plan to film the entire adventure. What starts as a rock documentary quickly becomes a crowd-pleasing journey about family, ambition, and the creative process. I have one more pair of tickets to see this film, Mistaken for Strangers, featuring the band The National, and also an after party special pass with our own J-Ro from Radio Free J-Ro, spinning tunes right there at the Cinema Arts Center. Give me a call right now. I have one more pair of tickets. Give me a call, 631-632-6901. 631-632-6901. This film is Monday, June 30th, 7:30 p.m. at the Cinema Arts Center. 631-632-6901. Get yourself a pair of tickets to this great, cool screening of Mistaken for Strangers. Give me a call right now. 631-632-6901. Join Steven, who's also going. And yeah, that's right. Let's rock, baby.
Aquí sin ti soy mula, sin arriero, muerto de ser por los caminos de la vida. Quisiera ser aquella nube pasajera para buscarte en los lugares que me ofenden. Quisiera estar en donde estás ahorita mismo para arrancarte de los brazos donde duermes. Tú eres el sol con que se alumbra mi existir, tú eres el agua con que se apaga mi que respiro para vivir, pero esta tierra donde a mí descansaré. Si me emborracho para olvidarte, no te olvido, pues en el fondo de mi copa estoy viendo, en el fondo de mi copa tú te burlas, con esa risa que me mata el pensamiento. Tú eres el sol con que se alumbra mi existir, tú eres el agua con que se apaga mi sed, tú eres el aire que respiro para vivir, tú eres la tierra donde a mí descansaré.
That's right, and that was Mariachi Flor de Toloche. I'm coming close there, I do believe. Well, maybe I am, maybe I'm not. But I saw them the other evening. They've been around for a bit, all-female mariachi band. And those of you who are familiar with mariachi at all, you know, are probably familiar with the male singers with the big sombreros and all the rest of the thing. And this is a bunch of lovely young ladies, and loveliness is a wonderful thing, but it's their voices that really make these tracks soar. and they're getting ready to put out a new record right now. But I saw them in at LIC Bar in my neighborhood in Astoria just this last weekend on Sunday, and just